It's Thursday, August 18th, 2022. My name is not Sam Cedar, nor is it Emma Vigeland. It is, though, Matt Binder. And this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. And I just messed up Emma's last name, didn't I? But that's okay, because we are broadcasting live, not from Brooklyn today, but steps from Citi Field, home of the Mets, New York's number one baseball team right now, in the real heartland of America, Queens, New York City. On the show today, we will be talking with author Catherine Liu to discuss her book, Virtue Hoarders, The Case Against the Professional Managerial Class. Also on the show, the federal judge who approved the Mar-a-Lago search warrant is going to hold a hearing today for press. Trump attempts to play 4D chess by endorsing Democratic primary candidates in New York, like Caroline Maloney, who in turn has rejected his endorsement. The price of chicken wings have dropped to four-year lows. Let's go, Brandon. Big tech companies like Facebook owner Meta, Twitter, and TikTok have renewed enforcement of their misinformation policies in preparation for the upcoming midterm elections. On that same social media beat, the anti-LGBTQ account Libs of TikTok has apparently been banned from Facebook amid a campaign that has resulted in her right-wing followers sending death threats to the Boston Children's Hospital over transgender care. Also, I think the big news today is top Trump executive Alan Weisselberg has pled guilty to fraud in New York. More will obviously come out of that as things progress. Apparently, Weisselberg will give he could be called to hearings for Trump's own legal woes in the future. All that and much, much more on the show. And it's just me, Matt Binder, and producer extraordinaire Matt Leck on the show today. I guess we can call this the Matt-jority report, if you will, right, Matt?
Yeah, it's a Matt-jority Thursday until Brandon gets here, at least.
Right, and then it's an all boys day when
Thursdays for the boys.
Thursdays for the boys, right? Oh man, little callback to the, you got to play that one in the going into the second half, right?
What, like the Trump version of that meme or what?
No, there's the one where there's the second half intro where I believe I even go like, oh, Thursdays for the boys or something like that.
Oh, really? Maybe I just haven't heard it. It's in the new one? We will play that one.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. The one. Right. But before we get to our guest, I feel like we should play this clip because, there's nothing more manly and masculine than a strong, steadfast, conservative male, right, Matt? I mean, that's the prima donna. That's the gorilla mindset right there.
Yeah, alphas.
A
scientific classification of masculinity.
Absolutely. So let's play this clip of one of those alpha males right now.
If they were to call you, the committee, to come and testify, talk, would you be agreeable?
Well, I would. If there was an invitation to participate, I would consider it. But you've heard me mention the Constitution a few times this morning. On the Constitution, we have three co-equal branches.
Let's just pause a little bit to explain to some folks what's happening. So he has to kind of play both sides of the fence here. He has to say that he'll simultaneously cooperate because he doesn't want to, like, you know, go to jail like the CFO of Trump Org. But he also has to be tough for the base here and be like, oh, I don't know if I can actually do that.
Right. And to give it a little more context for the people who are listening to the podcast version of the show without the visual, that is, of course, former Vice President Mike Pence. And he's at an event speaking and he's being asked, oh, would you provide testimony or would you speak to the January 6th committee if they invited you to talk about what happened that day? I mean, they were the Trump supporters, the MAGA faithful who showed up to attempt to overturn the election results, or thought that's what they were there to do on January 6, 2021. I mean, their number one goal on top of, you know, overturning the election for Trump was, you know, Mike Pence's head, right? I mean, they were angry at him for not doing it. I mean, if Mike Pence was brave enough to stand up and say, no, I am overturning the choice of 80 plus million people who voted for Trump's opponent, and just hand it all to Trump because that's what I can do, apparently, even though that's not what he can do. Because he didn't just do that, they had to go down there and storm the Capitol building. So they were really pissed at him. So let's is there more? There's more to that clip, right?
Yep.
If they were to call you, the committee, to come and testify, talk, would you be agreeable?
Well, I would. If there was an invitation to participate, I would consider it, but you've heard me mention the Constitution a few times this morning.
Lay it on thick, Mike.
On the Constitution, we have three co-equal branches of government. And any invitation to be directed to me, I would have to reflect on the unique role that I was serving in as vice president. It would be unprecedented in history for a vice president to be summoned to testify on Capitol Hill. But I, as I said, I don't want to prejudge. If there's ever any formal invitation rendered to us, we'd give it due consideration. But my first obligation is to continue to uphold my oath, continue to uphold the framework of government enshrined in the Constitution that has created the greatest nation in the history of the world. And we'll do that. And we'll do that.
Right. That's basically a lot of blah, 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 a lot of talk, a lot of words. For Mike Pence to still, to this day, try to sort of play both sides. Like, he knows that there is a very, 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 very small, tiny base of Republican Party faithful who are going to fall for that talk that he's currently throwing out there, all about what Mike Pence's duty is and all the norms. There's not much left of that in the Republican Party, but that's who he's talking to, because he knows those are the people who, if he decides to actually run for president, which this little tour he's on is all about, those are the people who are going to bolster his campaign and give it the backbone it needs, at least while it gets started. And honestly, in my opinion, that's all he's ever going to get, that very tiny minutia of Republicans right there who fall for that sort of rhetoric. But he also thinks he can play to the MAGA crowd. I think that's what this is all about, where he doesn't want to promise that he's going to go in front of the horrible, evil January 6th committee, because that would be unprecedented. I mean, I'm all about being just an upstanding former vice president and following the rules, according to Mike Pence. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out for him. It makes him, as a dirty leftist, it makes him look extremely weak and docile to me. I don't know about you, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way that he's doing basically a George W. Bush impression, where like half the words are him inhaling. So it's like, the Constitution, I'm going to have to think really hard about my oath and stuff like that. And it's like, man, I don't know if that really works post-Trump. Like, that was a pre-Trump sort of conservatism. I mean, good luck trying to make it fly now.
Right. I mean, we now know that there is one oath for the vast majority of Republicans, and that is the oath to Trump, fealty to Trump, being all about, I mean, that's what Trump himself is all about. It's not loyalty to his office or even any of the supposed values he claims to be for. It's all about loyalty to the man, Donald J. Trump, which, in the eyes of the Republican Party, Mike Pence already has none of. There's no loyalty to Trump, because if there was, he would have overturned the election results on January 6th, 2021.
And Brad, we just want the truth. It's simple.
All right, folks, we got a quick message from our sponsors delivered by Sam Cedar himself, I believe. And after that, we will be back with author Catherine Liu to talk about the professional managerial class.
All right, just a quick word from our sponsor today. It is already making me hungry, and I just had some for breakfast. Magic Spoon cereal has got that sweet flavor and crunchy texture you love from childhood. But are you ready for this? It's healthy. There are 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 net carbs, grams of carbs in each serving. It's low carb. It's keto friendly. It's gluten free. It's grain free. It's soy free. And only 140 calories a serving. And now you can build your own box with a huge variety of flavors. You can check out the classic flavors, the cocoa, the fruity, the frosted, and the peanut butter. And the cult faves, blueberry muffin, maple waffle, and honey nut. Or the indulgent ones, cookies and cream and cinnamon roll. Well, now, wait a second. How is honey nut a cult fave? Honey nut has been like, so for me personally, and I think everybody knows this. Like, I get into a rut. I get into a habit. Cinnamon every day. But the honey nut I find extremely tempting because that's what my kids love. Middle of the night, cinnamon. Don't want the honey nut. Some, like, weekends, maybe honey nut for me. Or cookies and cream. I'm hungry now. And then I mix the peanut butter and the cocoa. But that's it. Kids like the fruity. It's awesome. And the best part is I'm giving this to my kids and I'm not filling them full of sugar. Go to magicspoon.com/majority report to grab a custom bundle of cereal. Try the magic for yourself. Be sure to use our promo code majority report at checkout. You save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product. It's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/majority report. Use the code majority report. You save $5. Thank you for Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode. Thank you for sponsoring my midnight snacks. Thank you for sponsoring my breakfast, my kids' breakfast, and for me not feeling like I'm a bad parent because I'm feeding them a bowl of sugar, which I am not doing. Apparently, it's like monk fruit extract. I don't care. The kids love it and no sugar. That's awesome. All right. Now back to Matt.
We are back. My name is Matt Binder. This is the Majority Report. And joining us now is Catherine Liu, author of the book Virtue Hoarders, The Case Against the Professional Managerial Class. And she's a professor of film and media studies at UC Irvine. Catherine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Now, Catherine, I was reading this book and you know, the professional managerial class is something, and everyone should go check this book out. It's a, one of the great things about it too, is it's a quick and really short read. It's only about this big, which is perfect for someone who has to go through all this stuff and read everything. So I was able to take it all in and really get an understanding of, you know, your analysts. Analyzing of the professional managerial class. And this is something we've talked about on this show before. And I think for people who listen, they know what the PMC is, the professional managerial class. But for people who might be tuning in for the first time and are saying to themselves, what in the world is the PMC, professional managerial class? Can you break it down for us? What does that mean?
So the professional managerial class today are people who hold higher degrees, often belong to professional organizations like doctors, AMA, like professors like me. We have professional organizations that are supposed to regulate what we do. Lawyers have the Bar Association. And within this class, we have like also striations because people who go to a state school like the one I teach in, which is still, you know, pretty elite, are different from people who go to the Ivy League or different from people who go to the small liberal arts colleges. And today's media and content producers are inordinately dominated by PMC people who have gone to elite universities, elite graduate schools, and then come from a very tiny handful of schools, mostly on the East Coast. So to give a little historical background, they're also white collar workers, right? And I like to define them as people who are not working with their bodies. So in 1900, let's say in America, which was mostly agricultural and with a growing industry base, there were only 3% of like white collar workers or professionals. And today of the workforce, today they make up about 25% of the workforce. They were defined by Barbara and John Ehrenreich as a group of vanguardists on the liberal left in 77 who were completely taking over left liberal organizing spaces like the Democratic Party. And what they saw was this professional managerial class dominance of liberalism at the expense of working class people and working class interests. So that's one thing I want to make clear. The other thing that I've noticed online, because I sometimes do spend a lot too much time online, is that people have started taking up working class as a kind of purity politics. Like, I'm working class, you're a PMC scumbag. And it's like, that's not class analysis. The PMC actually loves to moralize things and to make things like pure. Like, they're pure, they recycle, they do lifestyle maintenance type things. But the other thing about this class is that it really, really works hand in glove with capitalism. We're not judging. Like, true leftists do not judge. Like, we analyze, we critique, we take down. But one of the things that we should do is keep our ire for capitalists, right? So, but at the spear tip of the PMC, you have people like Mark Zuckerberg, who was born into a professional managerial class family, or even, Bill Gates, right? And they're able to turn their social, cultural, economic capital into this kind of entrepreneurial wherewithal, and they've ascended to the capitalist class. So there is like a tiny bit of social mobility between the spear tip of the PMC and the capitalist class. But most professional managerial class people, like me, like probably you, we're wage laborers. We go to work, we depend on our paycheck. We don't live off capital. And that's like a really important thing to understand, is that the PMC really are workers. They're salaried workers. And there's this one really great way that Siegfried Krakauer in 1929 defined the salaried masses. They were people who were paid by a salary rather than by the hour. And oftentimes they didn't make as much as, industrial working class people who worked in factories. They were like paper pushers in Berlin. But they look down on people who work with their bodies. So they could be like salesmen. They could be even the clerks at, the lowliest sales clerk at a department store. But for themselves, for their consciousness, they thought they were better than working class people. But they were part of a segmentation of workers in the working class that happens under capitalism. As capitalism becomes more and more complex, industrial production becomes more and more efficient, so we don't need so many people in the factories or in the farms, and we need a lot more people to manage the flows of capital, to manage people, to reproduce capitalism itself. So that's what I like to, how I like to define it. But I really want to come out strong against this, like, moral critique that people default to in America. Like, just stop. That is not leftism. Like, say, you're PMC scum, I'm really pure. It's like, fuck that. Fuck right. That. That is not politics. What do you stand for? What are you doing? What do you say? It's not about identity. Politics, PMC is a category that defines your relationship to a mode of production. Like, try to keep that in your little leftist brains to be leftist. I'm really mad about this, actually, that it's been that working class has now taken on all of the aspects of another identity. It's not. It's a relationship to the means of production. It's a relationship to your boss. It's a relationship to the economy. That makes it really different from any like essentialist notion of like, this is my identity. I'm this, I'm that, I'm a unicorn. I'm a frog. No, No, I just want to say that right now. Sorry, you've got me on a little.
I'm glad, because I think this is really one of the interesting things about this. I mean, new class. I mean, like you mentioned, John and Barbara, Aaron Reich in 77 come up with this term. And I'm sure as time has gone on, like since 77 to now, there is a whole slew of new jobs, I mean, just new professions, totally new industries, thanks to technology, the internet, et cetera.
And also the financialization of the American economy, because we offshored all our jobs and then we created we're content producers, financialized people. And there are also Orthodox Marxists or whatever, who are saying no, that class did not exist in Marx. We can't talk about it. And it's like, you know what? Things have changed since 1846. Marx's class struggle is still the engine of historical change. We should always remember that. But there actually has become striations within the working class.
Right. I feel like, when it comes to the working class and, the ownership class, it's a lot more well-defined, whereas it seems like PMCs, and I've seen this, like you mentioned online, it seems like people rage at individuals that they consider to be PMCs, and then people who don't consider themselves to be PMCs rage against that. I feel like let's sort of set the stage here, because I want to make this sort of clear. Is the term white collar, like the white collar jobs, is that interchangeable terminology for the professional managerial class? Like, are all white collar jobs PMCs?
Yes, in some ways, because white collar jobs mean you don't work with your bodies, but there are also lower level white collar jobs, higher level white collar jobs. The historical, let me be a little pedantic here, the historical background is that Seabright Mills, leftist sociologist from Columbia University, writes the book White Collar in the 1950s. He's already anticipating this growing group of people who do not work with their bodies, but who are wage earners, right? And so they are, manning the bureaucracy. For him, it's like the post-New Deal government bureaucracy is empowering white collar people. The other thing about 1953 is you've got the beginnings of the Cold War. So you've got engineers, modelers, nuclear strategists. These people are becoming more and more powerful within American politics and economics. And so, you have the white collar, crazies like Dr. Strangelove in Kubrick's film, who are, mad scientists. And then you've got the white collar secretary who's working, in the front of an office. And you can say that's incredible, range of professions. But what the thing is about the PMC and the salaried masses that Krakauer talked about was they love to distinguish themselves from people who work with their bodies and people who actually damage their bodies through work. And, one of the things that the Marxists of the early 20th century said was we actually have enough productive capacity and efficiency to sort of liberate people from this kind of backbreaking work. But why is leisure time? Why is better work being hoarded just for a small few? And why are people who are doing backbreaking work or becoming a reserve labor force? They're just, perpetually unemployed, or they work, they break their bodies in 10 years, then they're, thrown, cast aside. One of the things that we should think about is that capitalism has actually evolved to a point where we're more efficient about production, and we should have everyone enjoy the fruits of that efficiency. But the PMC doesn't want that. Neither does capitalism. So.
Right. But, I will push back a little bit. Sometimes I get some really bad carpal tunnel. So, I mean, I do.
Oh, me too. My back really hurts. Right. No, I know. We have the small motor problems. I know. Sitting can be really bad for you.
It can. Yeah. Yeah. But, the interesting.
That's why you need to do yoga, Matt. You need to do a yoga.
Yes, I need what I need is a good manager who can get me all those sort of that sort of mindset where I need to
wellness. You need a wellness program,
right? Yes. Now, I think a lot of people know exactly the type you're talking about. The a perfect example, I think, in modern times is someone who lives in suburban America and puts out one of those signs where it says, like, in this house, we believe Black Lives Matter and climate change is real, et cetera, et cetera. And then these are the same people who, when a waiter or waitress is a little bit slow to their order at a restaurant, they ask, oh, I want to see your manager.
Yeah, yeah. There's a, yeah, I mean, there's that, which is just irritating. But there's also the fact that they voted against Bernie Sanders. They hate Bernie Sanders. So they might believe in science, but they actually don't believe in socialism, which is actually a more rational way of managing a complex economy, right? So they can believe that Black Lives Matter, but they don't want to have like lower income housing in their neighborhoods. Like there are material things that this class could have done in 2016 and 2020 to vote against the professional managerial interests that dominate the Democratic Party. And they didn't.
Right.
So you know what I have to say to that? It's like, don't pretend. Don't pretend to be on the side of progress because you just screwed us so badly. Sorry.
Right. No, right.
I am I have a very dark view of the world right now, but I don't want to. But I do think that they're guilty. I mean, we're guilty. I'm guilty, but I try to point out our collective responsibility for the really bad state that we're in. Oh, by the way, like the Inflation Reduction Act, really good for fossil fuel companies, but also really good for upper middle class suburban people because of all the tax rebates on solar and electric vehicles. So why isn't there a real infrastructural investment in public transportation? No, because this class actually stands in the way of progress.
Right. You know, one of the interesting things about PMC class, as it's defined, it seems like a lot of it is like a lot of what's behind it has to do with, I guess, what we would call, and you don't really see this in, you know, the basic definitions of working class or the capitalists. It seems like it revolves around these cultural identities more so than any sort of obviously the work has something to do with it, the type of work, but even more so than like your income level.
So I think of that as being kind of aspirational. There are people who, like, especially of your generation, who are born into like professional managerial class positions, but their situation is unstable. Economic situation is terrible, right? Or you're working class kid, you're really smart, you go to college, and then you're inculcated in these consumerist values, and you think like that's what you want to identify with. There's this mode of consumption rather than like an understanding of how we are all related to the economy through a mode of production. And that's something that has happened in the post-68 era as well, where a lot of leftism started to focus on consumerism and lifestyle rather than production. And the thing about the PMC is that it wants to look at the rural, industrial, working class as backward. And that really happened in 68, you know, that really happened because they were the political divide, the false political divide that we have today. It really was born then. Like the hippies were, they all went to college. A lot of them went to college. They went to, you know, they assumed positions of power. You might want to call them boomers today, but they thought themselves really superior to these backward Americans, to these backward working class people. And that kind of consumerist lifestyle progressivism is really, you know, it's the kind of progressivism we have today because of the domination of the PMC, of left liberal spaces, if you like. The other thing is the Cold War. You know, and no one wanted to speak the language of historical materialism, class struggle, class agitation. And, you know, you have a class that's very craven with regard to its own positions of power because it's intermediary. It always wants to climb up. And so it plays into the hand of U.S. imperialism, anti-communism. In the book, I say, like, if it actually believed in liberalism, it would be skeptical about its own positions. But it's also, in the neoliberal age, given up on any kind of liberalism, I would say, like high liberalism, and it engages in a form of, I would say, like, actual obfuscation of material interests and material struggles of people. So people who are in academia, who are like leading thought leaders, or, you know, from especially deconstruction in the 80s and 90s, they thought of Marxism and materialism as being vulgar. John and Barbara Ehrenreich were heavily criticized for their own theories of the professional managerial class and from a position of leftist orthodoxy too. But from all different sides, they were getting it. And so then in 1989, the Soviet Union falls and it was like, see, capitalism is fantastic. Right. And this class is really a good apologist for power. You know, it always was, because historically speaking, it's linked to courtiers, it's linked to the clerical class. It's a literate class that, you know, interprets the truth, interprets science, interprets the book. And they're just like the biggest, you know, kiss-assers in the world. So who rules us? Who's in power?
Right, right.
Blackstone. Okay, sorry.
No. I thought it was a rhetorical question, actually. Pretty much.
Who's your boss? Who's our boss?
Right. But here's the thing that sort of it makes me feel like, you know, again, we discussed how like the things have changed since this term was coined. I feel like there is an interwar, like a civil war between PMCs, because what you see now, especially like talking in the present day right now, we see a group of people, probably my age and younger, I'm 35, who grew up in a time where we were told, due to how the capitalist system works, where you need to aspire to a higher education, you need to at least go to college, you take out whatever loans necessary, whereas the older PMCs, they're not starting, like they didn't start with that same debt that these younger PMCs are now dealing with, so they're at a whole different income level. In fact, some younger PMCs might even be in a situation worse than some people who chose not to go to college and instead start a small business or something. On top of that, you then now hear that these younger PMCs, or people who would be considered PMCs, who are on the younger end of PMCs, the millennials and Gen Z and incoming generations after that, they are begging for relief of some sort to help them at least get on the level so they can work to, you know, try to get back on track to where they should be in their life. Right. But then you have these older PMCs saying, no, this is on you. You should pay off your debts. This shouldn't be forgiven, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, when you have over $100,000 worth of student loan debt, you are a slave. You're basically a chattel slave to whatever financial organization owns that debt, from Citibank to Sallie Mae. You are going to carry a ball and chain for the rest of your life. Now, how did that happen? Escalating tuition costs, of course, in college, but also this ideological message that everyone got, which was that you had to go to college to get a better life. America has a social elevator. You get in that social elevator, it's called college, and you go up the elevator and you ascend to a higher level of income and lifestyle than your parents, etc. So what happens is that we have indebted not just one generation, but many generations of young people through this propagandizing of college. I'll give you an example of someone who I met recently who rejected that narrative. But, you know, it is really exceptional. He didn't start his own business. It's a great way to go bankrupt, starting your own business, by the way. But he got a union job laying cables and digging posts for Southern California Edison. But he doesn't work for SCE. He actually works for his union. So he told me he makes $49 an hour. Plus overtime if he works dangerous jobs, etc. And last year he made $195,000. He's 21 years old. But when I asked him what he did, he was very modest. He goes, I just dig holes. I go, that's not possible. You can't just dig holes. He goes, okay, I touch power. It's very dangerous. It's not for everyone. But my union does this, this, and this for me. I never have to look at an SCE boss. You know, Southern California Edison's really horrible company. He goes, I never have to deal with all the bosses. It's very, very old school. It's like they post the jobs. If I want to take a hurricane relief job in Florida, I can drive over there in my truck. But he goes, I try to tell my buddies that this is what they should be doing. He comes from a working class background. He goes, they're working minimum wage at Walmart or whatever. But he's like, you know, the union does this, this and this for me. There are 300 openings in California right now. No one wants to do these jobs. And there used to be a lot more of these kinds of jobs because unions were more powerful. The infrastructure was considered really important. And today we have, you know, 300 jobs openings is a tiny drop in the bucket. But the whole idea was like somehow he was not propagandized into thinking like, I got to go to college and then I got to go or even community college and I'll transfer to a UC. If you come from a working class family, that seems like a good deal, except when you get to the UC, you the costs are higher. Your grants and scholarships and Pell Grants probably don't cover all of your tuition. And what you've given up as a working class young person is earning ability during like your prime earning years. And that hurts you. It hurts your family. So I don't want to hear all this stuff about like how, oh, we've got so many grants and scholarships for working class students, you know, from every university. It's like that just feeds the machine because everyone has to take out debt to make sure that, you know, you can get food at the end of the month. You know what we've got? We've got a food pantry on campus. We're constantly asked to donate there. That's a tacit acknowledgement that a lot of our students are actually going hungry because of the high cost of living, high cost of housing, and the high cost of tuition. Given that, we're still a complete bargain compared with, you know, private universities. They also say things like, oh, yeah, we've got such great aid. You know, 50% of our students are on aid. Is it like a shell game then? You charge 50% of your students full tuition, which is $80,000 a year now for private schools. And then you give like $50,000 grants to your working class students and they still got to make up 30K somehow. So they take out loans, thinking this is going to better their lives. It's a complete con at this point. I'm sorry to say, I wish that higher education hadn't become this way, but it's fully financialized. At this point, it is a toy of banks and loan-making companies. Now, everyone's going to tell you, the costs of education are so high, we cannot afford this. Just think if we took subsidies of banks that the federal government does of student loan debt and interest and just gave it as block grants to public universities. It'll never happen because actually if public universities became free like Bernie wanted, it would actually collapse the cost of all higher education. If right. Berkeley was free, if the UC was free, who would want to go to from California, at the West Coast, actually, would want to go to a small liberal arts college on the East Coast. You know what I mean? So it's just another scam. I hate to say this. So I tell people now, like, do not ever take out loans. Do not ever do not buy into the idea that, you know, prestige, and do not indebt yourself with regard to prestige and try to educate yourself in every possible way. Maintain your curiosity and don't think that you have to be institutionalized in a higher education environment. Now, the thing is, if you're in your 20s and you want to read and do research, there are fully funded PhD programs. They're hell holes right now because of all the politics within it. But if you have a program, someone pays you to go to school, do it. But as an undergraduate, do not chase that prestige. Do not take out that loan debt. It's not, I mean, it sounds like people say like I pulled up the ladder. I mean, infrastructurally, like that ladder doesn't exist anymore. And it's by pure accident of things that happened. I was at the tail end of that ladder being pulled up. That ladder doesn't exist anymore. And it's not me pulling it up. The whole question of social mobility through education is one of the greatest shams in American capitalism. And because the PMC wants to be gatekeepers with regard to higher education, it is very, very invested in keeping up that illusion.
Right, right. So this is the sort of thing, though, that it, from what we're discussing right now, that makes me feel like the professional managerial class, as it's now fits into the current, you know, sphere of the workplace and the labor force, sort of feels a bit outdated or not as well defined as the more traditional working class and the ownership class. Because, for example, like, you know, someone like the, you know, for example, who I was talking about, like, you know, the people who are working an office job. I'm a journalist. I work in an office. I'm a union member too, part of the News Guild. Zero power over anybody. I'm not a manager over anybody. There are people who are well below me in terms of power and other jobs, I'm sure, like data entry workers. In fact, I know small business owners and actual managers call some of that like white collar work, like grunt work. Like they call that grunt work because they're just people sitting in front of a desk and filling out data that they're being shown. I feel like, you know, a lot of people consider that to be, you know, PMC. And by definition, it seems like it is from our discussion, but it feels like that's sort of out of date, doesn't it? Yeah. Or am I misunderstanding?
No. I think that, you know, within the class itself, there are really stark strata. And if we want to revive the working class capitalist struggle, then maybe we should just tell people, like, you are working class. Like, this is... you go and you get this paycheck and you're being oppressed. If that's left, that's leftist education, you know, 101. And I think that's good. I'm not quite willing to give it up yet. And maybe it's just because of the managerialism of the class. I mean, it does take this attitude, like you are managing people and managing yourself. So maybe if you're a white collar worker and you're not managing anyone, then we have to just say you're working class. Don't identify with the PMC. Those are your bosses. Like you are a white collar working class person. And that would be a big shift. And I do think that's possible to really reconfigure that. Like you are literally being managed by someone else. You went to college, you think you're a professional, but you know what? I've also had people respond to me, respond to the book, who are doctors and nurses. And they're like, this is untenable. Like we're in situations in hospitals, in our training, where we are in debt. We are working 16 hours a day. We have no job protections. We're overburdened with regard to the patients we're taking care of. This is not what I signed on for in terms of patient care. It's all managed care. So what do you do with that? So do we take that kind of specialized trained people and say, and I think say to them, yes, align yourself with the working class. Don't align yourself with the PMC. Don't look up, look sideways, look down. And I think that's important. That's really important. Like doctors, young residents of your age come out with, you know, $200,000-$300,000 worth of debt. And they're like, you know, we've been screwed. We've been told that, you know, this is the brass ring to chase after. We can't give, our working conditions are horrible. So what I hope that we, what I want to do is just make clear that the structures of oppression that we live with, the exploitation that we live with. And I think maybe if you wanted to say that, you know, the way to spark class consciousness among lower tiered white collar workers is to just use the working class thing, then, you know, I'm for that. But I also don't think it should become like a purity politics. No, it's about struggle. It's about contradiction. And yes, every PMC person, if we could convert them, would be great. Like, just say like, your interests are not actually aligned with the interests of Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or your boss. Your interests are aligned with the interests of workers.
Right.
As a doctor, your interests are more aligned with, the nurses around you than with that, with Blue Cross Blue Shield or the HMO that you work for, the private hospital that you work for. Like defining what your interests are at work is really important. And I feel like the PMC is like completely deluded about its own role at work.
Right. I feel like teachers, especially at like the elementary school level, typically underpaid, and they're young, usually fresh out of school. And I mean, I feel like they are a good example of that as well. People who are underpaid, but would be considered part of this professional
class. So maybe we need to say there's a professional class of workers. And then there's a class of professional managers, and they're, you know, executing the will of the bosses on the professional worker.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I hate to get caught up in like the wording and the rhetoric, but other people do that. And I feel like it actually, you know, it makes people take things in a certain way. Oh man, there was so much more I wanted to get to in terms of like, and I know there's like parenting aspects of this, but one thing I definitely want to get to before we run out of time, I want to talk a little bit about the political party part of all this, because you get to that in your book, especially with someone like a Donald Trump, who seems to, like you say in your book, really caught the ire of the typical person within the professional managerial class.
Oh, right. He is the violator of all norms. Like in the language of gaming and the Pokemon, he's the ultimate villain, you know?
Right.
Couldn't have designed a better villain for the liberal. He violates norms. He has like horrible appetites. He's angry. He can't control himself. But the thing that he did was actually speak to a sense of American despair and outrage about what was happening. I mean, outrage in the wrong ways. But if you contrast him with the Democratic Party candidates who were just like, you know, let us take care of you. We've got all the solutions. We're technocrats. When you know that they're in the pockets of big business, he was actually like screaming. It was like the big baby. And there's a part of us, each of us, I think, inside that's screaming. You know, that's like this is just, you know, we're headed towards disaster on so many different levels. And why can't the left speak to that? I think Bernie did speak to that. Bernie spoke to that the whole time, but it was the Dems who screwed him over. So that was really revealing. Trump was a really convenient villain so that the Democrats could reorganize around the sense of norms and transgression. Like he violates all norms and we protect the norms.
Oh, absolutely. I think that type of liberal professional managerial class person who puts that sort of thing on a pedestal and views like civility politics as the most important thing imaginable is the absolute worst. But one thing that sort of strikes me as I was reading through the book and watching some interviews is sort of like just how PMCs, the discussion around PMCs is, and I mean, that's sort of how it was defined early on, but it sort of focuses strictly on the liberal ideologies. What would you call like someone who could technically be, due to their class and social status, a PMC, but who would be a conservative? Like, for example, we saw a lot of that come out in full force, for example, on like January 6th, for example, when all these news reports were coming out about like the real estate agent flying the private plane to the Capitol building. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not like the worker who was like fooled by Donald Trump's fake working class rhetoric. That is someone who is fighting to protect their own place in the class structure.
So like, according to Thomas Piketty's definition, like that real estate agent who flew his private jet in, he'd be a member of the mercantile right. Right. Maybe he didn't go to college. He just made like a giant bunch of money and he doesn't. And yes, he's, participating in the Trump coalition. The person I thought you were going to mention were going to be J.D. Vance and Josh Hawley.
Oh, so that's another.
Like they went to university. They went to, you know, fancy universities. They pretend to speak to the working class. They take on the most reactionary conservative positions, but they have this contempt for liberalism that the their working class constituents can sort of identify with, even though they're just like little worms who went to Harvard and Yale and just like, you know, played the game. But I do think that I thought you were going to say that. So where do we align them? Like, they're conservative professional managerial class, or even reactionary PMC people who play like up their appeal to working class people, or the disgruntled people who are disgruntled with liberalism.
Right. Like, I think that is Trump. Like, I think that is and still was and still is Trump's base. It's not so much those, you know, those working people in middle America who were fooled by his fake working class rhetoric that he would spout. I think his main base is like the petty bourgeois, like the people who are fighting to keep their status, who I think minus the like the liberal like yoga cultural stuff and the wellness stuff, like minus that, I mean, they are who I feel like structurally would be somewhere between like the small business owner and then also the professional managerial class. Like, I'm sure a lot of those people down there get a kick out of giving their you know, their labor workers, their grunts, as they would call them in some circles, a hard time every day in the office. Like the type that would like, oh, you know, I can't come to work today, my grandma died, you better be here, otherwise you're fired. Like that type of person, I think, you know?
Right. No, they really got off on Trump being part of that reality TV show, like a really tough manager.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's they're non-professionals, but they're like tough managers.
We also I feel like, especially with like the IDW, we see a lot of like, especially like,
what's the IDW?
The intellectual dark web, like people like the Dave Rubins and Jordan Petersons, Barry Weiss, that like fixate on what's going on college campuses. And you do see, I feel like, a number, it's still a small minority, but a number of like college professors come out with this idea that, you know, marginalized college students daring to have a voice and protest against someone speaking on a college campus, that they're somehow the biggest threat to American democracy there is, while also, putting on a pedestal some of these right wingers like a J.D. Vance, for example, who actually do threaten, I think, working people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing that we have to say is that, like, most working class people don't vote. Right. So the mobilization of what you call the petty bourgeoisie or the like the mercantile right, the Republicans are really good at that. They might be able to peel off some of the working class vote, but most working class people just are completely politically demobilized. They say they don't, the two parties don't care about them. And it's true. They don't. So one of the things that has happened, though, within the past couple of years is that there has been a non-college educated, you could say like more conservative, small business owner, petty bourgeois aspect and working class aspect of the Hispanic Latino vote that is peeling away from the Democrats. And I think that is really an important phenomenon to take into account. With Asian Americans as well, we have to look at the configuration of liberalism that focuses completely on cultural issues, that doesn't look at larger infrastructural issues like Medicare for all or even public transportation, things that would actually materially improve a lot of people who are freelancers or people who are contractors, like actually getting national health care in place. We can never do that. We do a lot of cultural stuff on the liberal side. And people like working class Latinos and Hispanics, Asian Americans, two of the largest, you know, I mean, most quickly growing constituents, they're peeling away from Democrats. So I'm just like, keep going, guys, you know, appeal to your, you know, small liberal arts college seminar constituents and look at what's happening outside the window. But in my most conspiratorial moments, like, I think this is what they want. They want a demobilization. They want disillusionment, the liberals. They want cynicism. And then it creates more reaction so they can create more outrage. The outrage feeds machine. It feeds like the fundraising apparatuses, like Nancy Pelosi getting on, you know, my text, getting my DMs going, you know, we need $15 from you because Roe versus Wade has been overturned. And it just, you know, in my most conspiratorial moments, I think it actually suits the PMC liberals have this kind of fractured politics that ignores the material well-being of the majority of Americans.
Right. Right. I mean, it's honestly, I'll never understand how people view this as, you know, for me personally, I view when everybody rises up and everyone is on a good playing field, then everyone benefits. The idea that, like, if working people somehow, you know, get public transportation and free college and or tuition free college, that somehow this threatens you will always astound me, because it will
them, though, because if you feel if there's good and it should threaten them, if there's good public programs, well-funded public programs, well-funded federal public programs, like they're a really well-managed national healthcare system, then people will realize, like, how powerful collective ownership is of services, of the means of production, and it should scare them. But we're too disorganized to actually bring that about.
Right.
Like,
right.
I keep thinking, like, if Medicare for All happens, then that's the first step towards socialization of a nationalization of the economy. So the capitalist class, they know that. So they're never going to let that happen. So Americans will die of bankruptcy, of medical bankruptcy, and will die because they can't afford drugs. And this is in the most advanced, most prosperous country in the world. And this is the stark nature of what we're dealing with. Maybe things will get to a point where it's so bad that we'll have, you know, this right, this coming to being of consciousness. But one of the things that I think that will happen is, like, the step-by-step, like Obamacare, incremental reformism still makes medical insurance really unaffordable for most Americans, right? So they'll just say, like, oh yeah, look at that program that didn't work. That really sucks. So what? You're going to really love Blue Cross Blue Shield or really love Prudential? I mean, that's how they get you into thinking there is no alternative. It's also when they give you that student loan paper and you're like looking at, I can't pay $35,000 on top of their, you know, $50,000 grant, but they're like, oh, you just sign on the dotted line, and you feel like, I got to do it. There's no alternative. So you just sign on the dotted line, and that you are now, like, you've now sold your future to Citibank.
Right. You know what my problem is, Catherine? It's just that I just don't have the PMC mindset. I just don't aspire to power. All I need is a basic income level that gives me and my family and my kids the basic necessities to be happy and live. And I would like that for everybody. And, you know, that would make me very happy. That's all.
You're,
that's
like
all
the
I
most
need.
Dangerous person in America,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, yeah, I
according
guess.
To them, because it's always about aspiring. It's always about ambition. Yep.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, that's my problem. I can't get into that PMC mindset, so I just will never understand it. Catherine Liu, author of the book Virtue Hoarders, The Case Against the Professional Managerial Class, and professor of film and media studies at the University of California, Irvine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
There was so much more, too, I wanted to get to that we didn't have time for. Where can people find you online or anything else you'd like to any link or anything you'd like to drop? Please go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I'm at I tweet at Bureaucrat Liu, but I'm tweeting less these days because Twitter is like a hellhole. But I'm working on another book, the follow-up book, which is about the weaponization of trauma in the age of neoliberalism and public austerity. The weaponization of private trauma in an age of public austerity.
Oh, I'm looking forward to reading that and talking to you again.
Yeah,
soon,
yeah,
I've got to
work
it.
On that. Ugh.
All right. Take care.
All right. Take care, Matt. Thanks
Have
so much.
Have a great
much.
Day.
Thanks Bye. So much. Bye.
Thank you. All right, folks. We are going to head into the second half of the show, the fun half of the show. But first, I was asked by Bradley to mention that there is a t-shirt sale on the Majority Report website, and it is still going on until this Sunday, the 21st of August at midnight. Go check that out. You can get your Majority Report with Sam Cedar gear. I believe there is some Emma Majority Report gear as well. I guess after today, we're going to need to get onto doing some Matt Jardy shirts too, right, Matt Leck? I mean, with our faces on it, I feel like that should be something in the pipeline.
We should do that. I just don't want to do it too close to the leftreckoning.com /store release that is also ongoing.
See, this is my problem. I don't have any Doomed or Scam Economy merch to drop. I don't have anything to. I got to
get
two
off shows, and you don't have merch for either. That's
I just printed up Scam Economy stickers a couple months ago that I'm giving out for free. I still got to send a bunch of them. That's my mindset. That's why I could never be in the ownership class. I could never be a good PMC because when I did print up merch, I gave it away for free.
Yeah. Well, also, like, I think, like, the real ownership and true, like, managerial PMC, like, they have the money to just spend on stuff like that. And whereas, like, when we do it, we have to be really concerned about, oh, crap, are we going to be screwed on taxes and international shipping and stuff? That's still very scary to, you know, workers like us.
Right, right. So we're going to go into the fun half. But before we do that, let's bring – is Brandon on? He's on, right? Yeah, let's go, Brandon. How are you doing, buddy? Oh, wait, I can't hear him.
We don't have your audio, Brandon. Are you muted? Let me see if I can unmute him.
Maybe Brandon just need to drop out really quick and then come back in. But while you do that, I will drop some plugs for my show. So, folks, if you liked my guest hosting duties here on the Majority Report, you might also like my two shows, Doomed with Matt Binder, which covers right-wing movements, reactionary movements, online right-wing conspiracy theories, extremist groups, disinformation, misinformation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's called Doomed with Matt Binder, and you can check it out at youtube.com/MattBinder, and for the podcast version at doomedcast.com. This past Tuesday, I had on Lance from the Serfs. And basically, I was away last week for a little family trip upstate, not too far, but I was sort of off the grid after I accidentally dropped my phone into the bottom of a creek and was completely cut off from the world. So I had Lance on to update me on possibly the worst week I could have taken off, apparently, the week Trump was, quote unquote, raided by the FBI. So this past Tuesday's show was Lance catching me up on everything going on with Trump and the FBI, the Fox News media reactions to it. We also spoke about the Alex Jones Sandy Hook trial that wrapped up a week or two ago. And we also spoke about this whole anti-trans horribleness going on online, spearheaded by like libs of TikTok and Matt Walsh of the Daily Wire, going after a children's hospital, Boston Children's Hospital, in their anti-trans rages that they go on. Their followers are sending death threats and disrupting the daily proceedings of this hospital. It's horrible. So check that out, doomcast.com, youtube.com/MattBinder. And then tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time at the YouTube channel and at twitch.tv/MattBinder and later as a podcast at scameconomy.com is my crypto criticism show, Scam Economy. I speak with Ed Zitron about all of Coinbase's various controversies over the past couple of weeks. It's a really fun, entertaining episode if you're interested in the anti-crypto beat. Also, after this show, after the fun half is over around 3 p.m., I'm going to go live on my YouTube channel, encourage people who don't get their calls through on the Majority Report to jump over to youtube.com. Oh, perfect. We'll get.
You can hear me. Sorry, I just interrupted all 18 shows you have to plug before.
No, it's all right. I usually would keep it short, but I'm hosting, so I'll take the extra time. So right after this show, youtube.com/MattBinder, 3 p.m., I'm going to go live taking calls and everything for maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. We'll see. So you're going to get, if you watch all Matt Binder today from 12 p.m. noon, this show to tonight, Scam Economy, and the post show Scam Economy, where I take calls as well, you're looking at like 8 hours of Matt Binder today. So youtube.com/MattBinder. Yeah, there. Oh, and Brandon, why don't you go now? Go ahead. What's going on in the Discord?
I don't have a full day's work worth of content for people, but as we speak, the latest episode of Discourse is uploading to the Patreon. We talk about the FBI raid on Trump's winter White House. We talk about Alex Jones being hit with the in real life ban hammer, AKA court fines. And we also talk about the, you know, the 2024 upcoming election and the lack of a Democratic Party bench.
There we go. Everyone should check out Brandon the and the Discourse. Yep.
Yeah. You guys should call it.
Oh, yeah. You got to come on Scam Economy eventually. I got to have you on soon. Maybe the week I get, I'm going away again in this week. So maybe you could come on the week after and we could catch up on all the crypto stuff that's been going on.
I'm a cryptoholic. I mean, you probably shouldn't say that because that probably means something different that I don't know on the internet. So I'll just say I'm a crypto enthusiast, not a secret enthusiast of crypto. I'm very vocal about it, though. You know, I've been reading about the Tornado Cash, you know, debacle. So
yeah, let's do that. I'll hit you up later today, maybe tomorrow, and we'll get on that. But folks, we're gonna go to the fun half now. Stick around. Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Matt Jardy Report. The Matt Jardy Report continues, but with Let's Go Brandon as well.
Yeah.
See you and, on the fun half.
Let me just get a plug in real quick. Ben Burgess is going to be joining David and I for the patron show of Left Reckoning that comes out every Sunday. We're going to be talking about debunking the right wing. Also, I look forward to a conversation I'm going to have with Joshua Conn Russell about ayahuasca and how to all things ayahuasca spiritually and also like the sort of tourism aspect of it. We're going to talk about all sorts of things like that. So Joshua Conn Russell, patreon.com/leftreckoning to get that.
There you go. I took your shameless merch plug as the full Left Reckoning plug. I made that mistake. I'm sorry.
Yeah, should probably plug the content a little too.
I've been thinking about making like Brandon shirts, but like they're just, you know, the market's flooded.
Right. Hell, while we're at it, if you're already supporting the Majority Report and you got a little bit of extra cash and you're supporting Left Reckoning as well, I don't want to step on anyone's toes. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. If you got some more cash burning a hole in your pocket, I'm trying to grow the Patreon page, bring some people on board to expand the show. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. And with all that said, let's go to the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Boo.
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go start life.
Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$6,543 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all?
Yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, Sundial Guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.